Our podcast reviews well-known movies and contains spoilers. The podcast may contain mature subject matter and mature language. Listener discretion is advised. Enjoy the show.
Quiet on set. Places, everybody. And action.
Welcome, everyone, to the Hooked on Movies podcast. Today, we will be reviewing the 1974 American horror film, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. With me is Ted.
I just can't take no pleasure in killing. There's just some things you gotta do. Don't mean you have to like it.
And Ken.
Come on, Franklin. It's gonna be a fun trip. I have any more fun today, I don't think I can be able to take it.
Thanks, Cartman. And I'm Eric. I think we just picked up Dracula. And that's right, we're talking Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Ted, particulars of this movie. The granddaddy of them all, I've been told.
Yes. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre is directed by Tobe Hooper. It was a screenplay by Kim Henkel and Tobe Hooper. It has a running time of 83 minutes. It had a release date of October 11th, 1974. It had a budget of $80,000 and a box office gross of $30.9 million. Texas Chainsaw Massacre stars Marilyn Burns as Sally Hardesty, Alan Danziger as Jerry, Paul A. Partain as Franklin Hardesty, William Vale as Kirk, Terry McKinn as Pam, Edwin Neal as the Hitchhiker, Jim Sydow as the Old Man, Gunnar Hansen as Leatherface, John Duggan as Grandfather, and John Larroquette as the narrator.
Really? John Larroquette's the narrator?
Yes, he is.
Wow, he's like the only name in that movie cast.
That is correct. At the time,
wow.
He was not even that well known at the time that the movie was released, but he went
on
to have...
No, not in 74.
He went on to have a very, very good career.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. So I'm intrigued what the reviews are of this movie. I assume you have some of the ones from the release and some current stuff?
I have all from the release date. Rotten Tomatoes score, the critic score is a certified fresh 89%, and the audience score is a 82%. Both overwhelmingly are positive. Let's start with the negative critics. Linda Gross from the Los Angeles Times said, "It's a despicable film about five young people traveling through the desolate flatlands of Texas who seek refuge in a mansion. Craziness handled without sensitivity is a degrading, senseless misuse of film and time."
Man, Roger, she just read my plot.
Yeah. Roger Ebert from the Chicago Sun-Times kind of gave it a lukewarm review. He said, "The movie is some kind of a weird, off-the-wall achievement. I can't imagine why anyone would want to make a movie like this, and yet it's well-made, well-acted, and all too effective." And then on the positive side, we had Dave Kerr from the Chicago Reader. He said, "The picture gets to you more through its intensity than its craft, but Hooper does have a talent." And Derek Malcolm from The Guardian said, "Morally retrograde it may be, but then so are nightmares. The point is that this one, though, often crude and raw, really leads the imagination. What also works in its favor is that it doesn't pretend to do anything more than scare the pants off you."
Ebert said that it was well acted. Wait a second here.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. I'm like, well acted? Well, okay. He probably dropped a lot of acid.
Standards are low in 74.
Well, so. Maybe there was some help while watching the movie. Speaking of watching the movie, when was the first time you guys saw this movie?
I saw the movie in college. I don't know why it took me that long to watch it. You know what it was? It was kind of one of those movies that just the idea of it freaked me out. So I probably just stayed away from it. But then in college, I watched it and I fell in love with it, and it's one that I watch at least once a year.
Oof, how about you, Ken? Cable, I assume?
Yeah, cable. Interesting enough, I saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 with Dennis Hopper before I saw this movie. To be honest with you, it was kind of like a one and done for me until we decided to do it for the podcast. So I haven't seen it in basically 25 to 30 years, somewhere around there.
Man, I can't tell you when I first saw this movie. I know I saw it probably 30 years ago, but if you asked me to describe any scenes from it short of the box cover, I couldn't tell you a thing about it. So for me, I think we're just going to say I saw it a couple weeks ago for the first time. Ken, you got a great plot for us on this one. Probably pretty simple, I assume.
Oh, very simple. Yeah, five young people, they go visit a gravesite because of some grave robbing. Two of the people are brother and sister, so they're checking on their grandfather's grave. I guess everything's fine there. So they decide to go check out the area because they lived there when they were really, really young, I guess. Of course, they're in a van together with barely any gas. They decided to pick up a hitchhiker who looks like the spawn of Satan. He, you know, basically steals Franklin's knife and cuts himself. Then he goes and cuts Franklin. In all this, he also starts a fire inside the van by burning up a pitcher. At no time did they say, maybe we should just not pick this guy up, or should we not drop him off? They basically find out that there's no gas. They go to the house that parents lived in or grandparents lived in years back. It's run down. There's nobody living there for years. A couple of them try to go find a place to go skinny dipping, but instead they find another farmhouse that nobody seems to be around. They go into the house, and sure enough, they start being killed one by one. None of them feels the need to get out of there. The two people that are left are the brother and the sister. The brother is in a wheelchair, so, you know, he's going to get it by the leather face guy. They take the girl back and they torture her in front of the family, and she jumps out of a couple windows here and there. At the end, she gets free and the story ends. That's it. That's the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
But you left out the trucker at the end. What happened?
I was saving that for our review. I'm still wondering if he's still running away, because for whatever reason, the guy at the pickup truck saves her and to go off on their merry way. But that poor trucker, he's still probably just still running away from his own. I mean, that was a nice truck. And the funny thing about that, and we'll, of course, touch on this later, they get in the truck and Leatherface decides he wants, you know, take the chainsaw and hit the door. The window's wide open. Why don't you just go through the window? We'll talk about it.
All right. Pretty interesting. This movie has an $80,000 budget. I thought was interesting, even for 1974. You have a bunch of no-name actors and actresses, and the movie sets are pretty much not even movie sets, are they? They're just actual places, restaurants, houses, whatever.
It was an actual house that they found in Texas, or in California. I can't remember which, but you could actually go visit it. Up until recently, I think it got tore down. It really helped start the tradition of the low budget horror film.
I mean, what was really before it, Ted? This is pretty the big one, isn't it?
This movie marks a distinct change in horror movies.
Yeah.
Horror movies up until this point were talking about the Roger Corman, the Edgar Allan Poe series and everything like
Vincent
that,
Price
where it was
stuff.
Vincent Price.
Yeah.
This is a shot across the bow. In the early 70s, and there was a sea change in Hollywood where a whole new group of directors came in and shook everything up. We're talking Scorsese and Coppola and, you know, all of your big hitters. And I mean, you can't really toss Toby Hooper into that category, but horror is going to change forever now. This is a sea change. This is gritty. It's dirty. It's loosely based off of a true story. It pulls no punches.
It ushers in the slasher films, you know,
right.
Friday the 13th, Halloween. When people were chased, they were chased by zombies.
Right.
Now it's the guy with a mask on and a chainsaw. So
it's
unique to the time. But yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it has that gritty, dark looking film. I always say that the 70s is all about dirt and grime, it seems like, for, you know, especially when it comes to horror films. You know, when we're looking at horror films, it's like more supernatural. You know, we have The Exorcist around this time frame. You had mentioned Roger Corman. You also have Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee films. You know, you have the Dracula films.
The Hammer films.
Yeah, that was kind of like the big thing around this particular time. And this basically, like I said, ushered in a new type of film. Like there's the part where Leatherface is chasing one of the girls up to the house, and she closes the door. And what does she do? She runs upstairs. This is the movie that tells you when somebody's coming after trying to kill you, that instead of trying to go to the back door or something, you go upstairs because there's an exit there somewhere. This kind of started the trend of those type of things.
Without Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Halloween doesn't get made. And you're right about the 70s being darker, because if you look at other movies around the same time, you have Last House on the Left by Wes Craven, which was banned. Texas Chainsaw Massacre was banned in some countries.
Now that's a dark movie.
Yeah, Last House Craven's, on the Left.
Yes.
You also have I Spit on Your Grave.
Yeah.
We're talking about hardcore horror.
Real hardcore. This is,
these guys are not holding back. It's kind of goes with the times. I mean, you look at 74, what was going on in the world. We were just coming out of Vietnam, and people had a different attitude towards things that scared them, because every night on the nightly news, they saw young men getting killed. The old horror movies didn't necessarily hold up anymore, because what was being portrayed on the news on a nightly basis was worse than what was put on film.
That's a good point, Ted, because what I'm thinking is these old horror films have a kind of style that's romance. That look, if you look at some, like even if you go all the way back to the Universal monster movies, there's a sense of beauty to it. Now we don't have that. And why do we not have that? Maybe it's because the war is being played on TV. And what do you have on TV? You have a grainy look at the world, you know? And yep. So I think that now translates to film in the 70s too, because that's what people are relating to. They're relating to that grain that they're seeing on TV. They don't have HD TVs back then. Some of them would be lucky to even have a color TV. They have that black and white. It's probably about, what, 19 inches? And that's probably even being nice right there. We're in an age right now where the grainy look, the dirty look, the non-polished film is working.
And people are just, they're fed up. And they're
not taking it anymore.
Right. You have to give it to somebody like Tobe Hooper to go out on a limb and make a movie that's essentially is groundbreaking. It ushers in, like you said, the tropes, like going upstairs. Well, it also introduces the trope of the final woman or the final girl.
Also, the fact that no matter how fast the woman runs, Leatherface is right there behind her. Even though he's chopping up little wood, he somehow is just a few steps behind her all the way. These are the tropes that we're used to. With Tobe Hooper, this is Kevin Smith, a guy who's probably a little bit more well-polished. I believe Tobe Hooper had some experience before taking on this project. But I mean, if you think about the budget and you think about the direction that he did, I mean, it was all real places. It wasn't on a studio lot. Clerks had, the black and white, but this is a grainy type of look. But I almost have very similar careers in a sense, because start off with a bang. And, I know Tobe Hooper later on, we talked about he did Poltergeist, but let's be honest, that's Steven Spielberg. His career kind of mirrors a little bit of Kevin Smith when it comes to directing.
I can definitely see what you're saying there. However, I think Kevin Smith's a little bit better of a writer.
Oh yeah, by far.
Did Tobe Hooper write this one too?
Yeah, he was one of the screenwriters.
Okay.
Like we said, it spawned a lot of all of the slasher movies. But it's also created inspiration for modern day horror movie makers. Like Rob Zombie, A House of 1,000 Corpses. It's not exactly the same, but it's very similar to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and that was by design. I mean, this is a consequential movie. Whether we think that it's, good cinema is one thing or another, but denying the impact that it's had on society, on movies itself, it's really undeniable.
Oh, clearly, anyone who is a fan of this genre probably quotes this movie as the one that kicked it off. You can't deny that. Cinematically, it holds its place in history for the movie that spawned every other movie after it. And you're right, without this movie, who knows if you'd have a Halloween? Who knows if you'd have any of those movies?
What Tobe Hooper does right at the beginning of this film is he makes it sound like it's a real life event. We get John Larroquette, which we were surprised to hear that John Larroquette was in this movie.
I was.
I mean, as the narrator, and the way he narrates it is it almost sounds like this actually happened. This was something that would happen, and this is based on a true story that happened way back when, and I'll let you talk about that later. But I like the setup, at least in that sense, because it reminds me how, like, the Blair Witch Project, when it came out, people were unsure if it was real or not real.
Exactly. It blurred the lines.
Yeah, and I think that when you do that, it gives you a different frame of mind for the rest of the movie. So when you're seeing this, you're asking yourself, did this really happen to these people? I bet you if you went to people in 1974 and they're like, oh yeah, that shit really did happen. I know it happened. This is based on a true story. I know it happened. It happened to a friend of mine's sister. I mean, I don't know. It's those type of things that was probably going on in 1974, which elevated this movie. I think that's why it kind of stands alone, why it's on like maybe a Mount Rushmore of horror movies, or at least from 1970 on, that people go back to and say, this is the start of a new genre. Then you have The Cemetery and stuff, kind of reminiscent of Night of the Living Dead. So I really give him kudos for the start of this film, putting it in the right frame of mind. After that, I don't know if it holds up as well, but I do like the start of it.
Yeah, setting it up, it makes you believe that it's a true story. That right there sets everything in motion. It's a perfect way to do things. And you're exactly right about like the Blair Witch Project, which took modern techniques and tools like the internet and turned it on its head. By them saying that this is true, immediately your imagination starts to run wild. What am I getting myself into? What's going to happen? And the first pictures that you see of the movie are not of a moving picture. They're of somebody taking crime scene photos, and you get the flashbulb. You see all of these horrific things. You see a chair made out of bones. You see decomposing corpses hung on the side of a road. All of a sudden, you're now thrust into a completely different world. And to sit there and think that this actually happened, holy crap. Now you toss in your fresh meat, the five co-eds. It's a brilliant way to do things, and it's why people ran out of the movie theater. It didn't have the cultural impact that The Exorcist had, where people were fainting and passing out in the movie theater, but people were viscerally disturbed by this movie because of a lot of the stuff that's in it. And a lot of that is imagination, because you don't actually see a lot of the violence. You hear it, but you don't necessarily see it. And that's something that modern day horror has lost, because now we have to see it. You have to see Hostel, where you see a guy lose his eyeball. Like, okay, we'll take the one girl who goes in and gets put on a meat hook. You know she gets put on the meat hook, but you don't see her get put on the meat hook. And you don't see the aftermath of her being on the meat hook. But you know it happened because you hear it. And it's in your imagination, and it allows that image to be burned into your imagination. And that's, like I said, that's something that modern horror has really lost, is the imagination factor.
You know, the squeamish parts of this movie are when they actually cut somebody's hand, or they cut Franklin's arm. You know, those things with the little knife and stuff like that, those are the squeamish parts, because you feel that those are that's really real what they're doing. In fact, I think when they cut her finger out towards the end, that they actually had to cut her finger for whatever reason. I think there was something that they couldn't do, you know, because they had a limited budget and for special effects. So they actually had to actually cut her finger, from what my understanding. The hitchhiker cutting himself in the van, and then cutting Franklin in the van. You can argue that the van itself is the most terrifying thing maybe in the movie. You pick up a hitchhiker, you don't know what he can do, but at the same time, you're sitting there going, how stupid are you guys to have a hitchhiker? And then you bring out a knife, and he steals the knife from him, think he's saying. Okay. As soon as he cut himself, they should have kicked his butt out of there.
But you also have to remember the 1970s is a completely different era, too, where hitchhiking was not looked upon as something that was deviant or, you know, not against social norms. Because if you look at a lot of the serial killers from the 70s, they picked up hitchhikers. I could start to name names, but that, I mean, we could be here all night as far as of serial killers picking up hitchhikers. I mean, I don't blame him for picking up a hitchhiker. I think the moment he started to turn weird and he started to talk and everything, they should have let him out. But you know what? Then he marks the van. The van is kind of like a trap because it runs out of gas and it's marked. And because after he cuts himself, he wipes the blood on the side of the van and marks it for the rest of his family.
How the heck does that van go as slow as it does? It's almost like they wanted him to keep up with the van for a few seconds there. To me, it was just idiotic that it even happened. But it is creepy. And then, of course, I'm talking about the slaughterhouse. I wish they would make these people a little bit likable. And that's the other trope. You got the unlikable young 20-somethings who deserve to die. Hey, yo, we're going to go and skinny dip.
They don't deserve to die.
But
luckily, they all died for the most part within the first 30 minutes.
The only character that I really, really grates on my nerves is Franklin.
Sure.
It was definitely a decision to cast a person who's handicapped in the role. His being in the wheelchair never creates the tension that it should. That is a problem.
I mean, the fact that he rolls down the hill trying to pee into a can, first of all, his pants are still buckled and his zipper's up when he lands, and that's kind of crazy. But you don't even give us time to even feel bad for this person. And so after he goes down the hill, he gets in that van. He's just a little whiny little bitch. You basically said, you know what? I don't feel sorry for you that you fell, you know, rolled down the hill. You have to make some of these people kind of likable.
Yeah.
And at least make the girl that you save at the end likable. I mean, to a certain extent, we do root for her, right? I mean, we don't want to see her die or anything like that. When you go into somebody's house, nobody answers, and you see some fucked up shit at the door, and you say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take a closer look at that. Guess what? You probably deserved it. You know, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, then that's what happens with all these movies moving forward, is people be like, hey, I shouldn't go into that room, but you know what? I'm going to risk it. Why? Because it's dark and I'm all by myself, and what could happen, right?
Well, if they didn't, you wouldn't have much of a movie.
I mean, and then she follows in with them. Then you have the couch or the whatever it is made out of bone, and she has all these skeletons all around. Get the fuck out, you know. but no, she stays there for a good 5 minutes, screaming her head off and being freaked out, which happens into all these movies moving forward. You have the girl who can't get away from being killed because she's too freaked out. And that probably does happen to people. They, you know, if they're put in that situation, they probably freeze because they don't know what to do. But you're in the middle of nowhere. You're going to pick the house that has no neighbors, not even a friendly dog to greet you, you know, outside. I laughed when Leatherface came over and hit him over the head. He hit him over like they would have hit over at the slaughterhouse. He's shaking, right? So he doesn't die right away. So he has to hit him again. There's just so much idiotic things that happen.
This is one of the reasons why I like the movie, is because I can kind of do this. I try to put myself in the time frame. When I watch this, I try to pretend like that I've not seen Saw or Hostel or one of these, you know, super violent modern horror movies. Because, some of it does come off as hokey. Because it's 1974 and we're breaking new ground. I have to give them a little bit of a pass on some of the stuff.
They didn't have common sense in 1974? That's my thing, is that some of this is just common sense. I know where you're going with what you're trying to do with this, but at the same time, 1974...
I'm sitting here and I have it on as we're discussing this, and they're just coming up on the two skinny dippers are coming up on all the cars that are covered up. And that kind of gives a perspective as to what exactly is going on here, that, you know, holy crap, they're not the only ones.
Those are their victim cars. That's what I'm taking.
Those are victims' cars. I get what you're saying. I have to give him a little bit of a little bit of a leeway because now we're desensitized. There's been so many slasher movies that it's become a joke. I mean, that's why Wes Craven wrote Scream, is because of slasher movies. You have to kind of look at it. We're breaking new ground. I particularly love the scene that you were kind of laughing at where we first see Leatherface. I mean, he comes out and he hits the guy in the head and he's sitting there. I mean, he's having a seizure on the floor. I mean, he's dead, essentially. It's freaky. There's some legitimate scary things in this movie, and I'll talk about a couple of them coming up. And that's another thing that this movie does, too. It doesn't sell out the killer, whereas modern horror movies, they sell the killer out, except for Saw. Saw didn't sell the killer out. That's why Saw, the original Saw movie, is I like it so much. It kept you guessing up until the last 2 minutes of the movie. Yeah, I mean, you see Leatherface, but it doesn't make a joke out of him. He's a bad mamma jamma, and he's legitimately crazy.
That's one thing I kind of wish, not with Leatherface, but with the rest of the family, if they came across a little bit more normal. But, I mean, they get to the gas station. This guy's already creepy. I think I would have liked it a little bit better if people that at first are trying to help her out seem to be normal. Maybe there is a mom, a mom and pop shop, and they're the sweetest people that can be, and they offer candy and all that good stuff. Tells them, come inside and have dinner, and maybe the guests will be there later. I don't know if they were targets to begin with when they first got there. It doesn't sound like it, but as soon as they start talking about that their father lived there, and I think then the wheels are starting to turn. But here's the thing. Franklin talks about this house and how he wants to go up there. And then when he gets up there, all he does is complain that they went up there. Like, right. It wasn't his idea, right? I guess I would want to go see my childhood home too if I hadn't been there in a long time. But this house looked like it was abandoned for like 50 years, not 5, 10, or 15.
You're talking about Franklin and his sister's grandparents' house.
Yes.
The house that Leatherface and the family live in is actually a fairly decent looking house.
Right. No, I'm talking about the grandparents' house of Franklin's. They get in there and that whole place looks like crap. And of course, you've got some stuff. It looks like there's been some satanic rituals being done inside this house. At least, I mean, we see little skulls hanging from the doorway and stuff like that. Right there, they need to say to themselves, we're in an area that we should not be in.
Well, but Franklin's the only one that sees it because everybody else runs off on it.
But he could say something to his sister and to, I guess that would be her boyfriend. Yeah. I'm wondering if that's her boyfriend or not.
That's why he fails as a character. In college, we had a friend, we watched this movie, and she didn't eat meat for 6 months after watching the movie.
Nice.
It still has a visceral effect on some people. As far as people being normal people at the gas station, I mean, he was normal during the day when he was telling them about the gas. It's when they get there at night that everything kind of changes.
I still think he's kind of creepy. And I kind of want to know who that guy is that's washing the windshield. Is he just part-time help or something? But
I think you got a lot of inbreeding in this whole family.
Exactly.
Here. It's got that Deliverance feel to it a little bit. You're in rural Texas. Which, if you think about it, you've got some pretty early 70s had some pretty weird stuff that came out.
Oh, yeah.
Movie-wise, your directors, your new crop, your Scorsese's, and they really did some liberties of changing what was done in the 1960s, the, stereotypical movie sets kind of deal with your big Hollywood stars, and brought in a lot of no-namers to really kick off their careers and their roles, and just really how these movies just, like you said, they're raw, they're grainy, they're not what was typical of the era. And I think the young market, the youth, really picked on to that and really kicked it off for them.
No, you're exactly right. It's hit you upside the head. I mean, and it doesn't let up. Once everything starts on this movie, it goes. There's no let up. It's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, it's slow to start, but then once you get the first one gets butchered, I still think it's funny when I see him go down. And then his friend later on, when he opens up the ice chest and the girl pops out, her eyes open and she pops up.
She's still alive, right? At that point or no?
I guess so, yeah. I don't know.
I'm not sure. Because as soon as she pops out, she kind of goes to the side. And maybe she finally dies then. I don't know. But that was a legit scare moment.
A little bit scary.
A little bit.
Yeah, I enjoyed that portion. But I think it's funny then when he turns around, then he gets hit like his friend does, and he goes down. It's like, boom, down. Like you said, Leatherface is a bad man, but he's also, it seems like he's a child. Later on, he gets yelled at by, I want to say is that their dad or is their brother?
Yeah.
Or they just call him the cook, basically, for the most part.
Right.
But he seems to be the leader because he's able to scold them. And of course, he gets mad about the door. I thought that was kind of funny. Of course, he takes the punishment. Here you are. You're the guy who kills people with a chainsaw. And you know, he tells us in this, he doesn't have the stomach for killing. He enjoys watching it.
That's even creepier. He couldn't work at the slaughterhouse because he couldn't kill the cows. If you want to talk about one of the scariest people, he's scary because he likes to watch it.
It's interesting. They have dinner ready there. I wonder if they were serving up her friends right there and then. It would have been more interesting if she took a bite.
Like a hot dog with a ring on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was so traumatized.
I give her credit for playing the traumatized woman to perfection. I think it's a little much to have her not jump through one but two glass windows. I mean, and not have any really serious massive lacerations.
The original scream queen, huh?
Well, she was a screamer.
She did scream, but that still goes to Jamie Lee Curtis.
Still goes to Jamie Lee, huh?
Yeah.
See, I don't know why it would go to Jamie Lee, because I think there's a portion there where she just screams for about 5 minutes straight.
Yeah, and off the table.
And that's all she does. That's a pretty good scream. We gotta give her credit. In fact, my favorite part is when she's in the pickup truck driving away from Leatherface, her scream laugh was perfect. The way she was kind of like hysterical, I liked how she laughed it off at the end. But I thought it was just too much of it. I mean, I'm not in that situation, and I hope to never be in that situation. But I'm not running up the stairs. First of all, that's too much exercise for me. I'm going to try to find a back door. But I do think it's funny when she goes upstairs and she finds Grandpa and Grandma there. Is that their dog there too? They have a little pet there, right? I feel like I see this little pet there. I'm just like, wait a second. This is just really, really messed up. And I guess Grandpa really loves Grandma because they stick him upstairs with her every night, it seems like, because they have to bring him down the staircase to have dinner. That is some weird stuff there.
You mentioned something earlier, too, that Leatherface is like a child. That's completely accurate, which also coincides with what Eric was saying about the inbreeding and things kind of like Deliverance, where he is handicapped in some way. These people are not operating with a full deck, okay? There's something that's off, completely off. Because this movie has spawned so many sequels and remakes and everything of that nature, that's how we know that Leatherface does have some sort of a mental condition. But he's highly effective at what he does. He's not to be trifled with. I actually think he's scarier than Michael Myers, Freddy, and Jason. We'll put it this way. When I used to go through haunted houses and stuff, the moment you hear the chainsaw, that shit's scary when you're in a dark room.
What makes Leatherface better than the ones that you just mentioned is Leatherface is human, whereas like Jason and Freddy and Michael Myers, they all tend to be these indestructible characters.
Yeah, superheroes. You
know? In fact, I kind of like the fact that the Leatherface accidentally cuts his leg up with his own chainsaw. And screams. That humanizes him to a certain extent. I mean, that doesn't make you sympathize with him or anything like that, but you now know that he's a really bad person, you know, a big mental disorder that makes him do the crap that he does, right? That's what elevates him over the other slasher films of the 80s,
right?
Because Leatherface is real. Jason, Freddy, Michael Myers, they're not.
Yeah. They're more superhero type.
Super evil powers. If we saw Michael Myers, he'd be able to lift you up with one hand with ease. Super strength. Jason, you could put him through a meat grinder and somehow he will show up in the next scene or in the next movie somehow. think I remember one of the Friday the 13th, Jason's grave gets struck by lightning and he then rises from the grave and, you know, here he goes again. But we don't get that with Leatherface. These are real human characters, and I think that's what makes it more scarier, or, you know, than the other slasher films of, let's say, the 80s.
We're trying to recapture the whatever, you know, this brought to the table. They made all of these sequels. And the problem is the sequels lost their way. Like we said, this is rooted in a true story. The sequels, it travels further and further away from the source material. That's where it gets lost.
Well, you can't recreate magic like we've said before.
True.
I mean, look at Psycho. You know, we have the remake of Psycho that basically goes scene by scene, shot by shot, word by word. And
yeah, that was Gus Van Sant's. That was his idea.
But that's an example of keep the source material too much and not trying to be your own thing. And I think that's the problem, is trying to find that balance. That's what's hard about sequels. Find the balance between being true to your source, but also being unique to yourself.
Yeah. If we want to talk about what we think is the scariest thing, when Sally wakes up and she's upstairs with Grandpa and Grandma, and that whole sequence where she gets brought down to the table, that's freaky as hell. There's something about that. She's screaming, and then Leatherface starts screaming back at her. And they're not making
it.
Yeah, it's there's something visceral about that. It legitimately scares me. I mean, because she's trapped. They have her. It's wild. I also love how the movie progresses, where, you know, she does jump out of the window to get away, but there's always somebody right there behind her trying to cut her off, because the movie is set up perfectly that you don't know if she's going to get away. Because here again, this is the first final girl. You know what I mean? Because that's one of the tropes, is the final girl. If you're watching this for the first time in 1974, you have no idea whether or not she's going to get away. I mean, that's freaky. She does end up at the gas station and gets brought back. The dad there, we've determined he's a little off, but she looks to him for help, and there's no help around. I mean, she's by herself until the truck comes along.
Right. I mean, I don't even know why he tries to even calm her down at first. I mean, he basically just needs to knock her out like he did earlier. I mean, he goes back to get the truck, but leaves the door open, and she's looking at the meat that's being cooked. I don't know what's going through her mind when she's looking at that meat. I don't know if she's looking at the meat wondering where the meat came from, because we don't know if this meat is people or if this meat is...
It's people.
But are we sure? I mean, how many people could they have killed, kept feeding them? I mean, eventually you would have to think, if you have 100 missing people in the area, that they're going to probably know this is the last area they might have been last seen.
The cooler was full. You had the scene with all of the abandoned cars. So business has been good.
So they actually ate human food, because they took some of that barbecue. Because we actually even see Franklin spit it out and, you know, throw it away. Funny thing that I saw in this movie, when two of them are trying to find the water hole to go swimming in, they come across the farm and they see the generator, and the generator says Wisconsin on it. So this movie is based on a serial killer in Wisconsin.
There are two movies that are based off of this person. This person, his name is Ed Gein. He lived in Wisconsin in the 40s. He was operating in the late 30s, 40s, and 50s. So he died in a mental hospital. He was never criminally charged because he was deemed completely insane. He lived in a house with his mother. His mother was domineering. Essentially, what happened was his mom died, and he taxidermied her and kept her in a room all of her own. But what sets Ed Gein apart from everybody else, as far as like a serial killer, because he's not technically, I mean, he's considered a serial killer, but he's not really a serial killer. He's charged with two murders. He was into grave robbing. So like at the beginning of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, they talk about grave robbing. What he would do is he would go dig up fresh corpses And what he wanted to do was make a female skin suit out of human flesh. He's infamous. If you mention Ed Gein, they know who you're talking about. When they raided his house after he killed an owner of a bar that he used to frequent, and they found her in his house hanging, kind of like how the one girl is hanging on a meat hook. But what they found in his house, it was a house of horrors. You had chairs made out of femurs, the legs made out of femurs. The lampshades were all made out of human flesh. The bowls he used to eat out of were carved out human skeletons. We're talking as sick as it comes. All of the agents and police officers that raided the house and took copious amounts of notes and documented everything, they all had to go to therapy. And a lot of them quit because of what they found in his house. He's sick, and it spawned two movies. It spawned Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and it spawned Psycho. He's held up as one of the, not only one of the craziest killers, but one of the sickest. The heavy metal band Slayer has a song called Dead Skin Mask. They wrote about Ed Gein. So Ken, when you see the generator, and it says Wisconsin, so I'm not exactly sure if Toby Hooper meant that, but it definitely probably could have. That is kind of a nod to Ed Gein. The city where he resided years and years and years ago, they had to tear the house down because it became a fascination site. But people still go searching for the land where his house stood because people believe that evil still resides there.
Well, someone's got to own that land, right? I mean, or does the state own it?
I think the state owns it because I think because he was the last of the family.
Yeah.
He had a brother, but I think the brother relinquished all ties to the land, so I think the state owns it. But yeah,
he wiped his hands clean of that one. So
I'm sure he did.
The story behind this is just as disturbing, if not more disturbing. And because that's why Leatherface has the human skin face over his own face. It's a nod to Ed Gein. It's disturbing. And it's a disturbing story.
Well, I mean, he lived in Wisconsin. What's in Wisconsin besides cheese and the Packers? I mean, that could probably drive any man insane. It's very interesting that we got two classic horror films from that scenario. Like the mother,
right,
and keeping his mother there, you know, all psycho, pun intended. And then, of course, you know, with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre furniture being made of, you know, human bones and things of that nature, and grave robbing. And it's amazing where we get some of these great movies from. I mean, we're going to be, our next movie, Amityville Horror, is based on the true events of the Amityville house. People have been labeling that house as a place of evil for years, and we'll talk about that in our next episode. Looking back, I appreciate this film for what it is. And it's a low-budget film that took some chances. I think there are chances that paid off. But I do think you have to be a fan of the genre to like this movie.
You're stealing my thunder. What's going on?
No, that's what I do. I steal your thunder and a lot of other things like Blu-rays and things of that nature. I watched this film a couple of times, and I look for what I could appreciate of this film because I am not a slasher flick kind of guy. Even though you mentioned Scream earlier, I appreciate that because it takes the genre and kind of somebody makes fun of it, but being its horror film and doing its own thing. We were talking about possibly doing slasher films as our thing for the month. Scream was going to be one of my picks because I think it's a nice nod to those things. But this is the granddaddy of them all.
You want to talk about your favorite scene?
What's your favorite scene, Eric?
The ending credits.
Maybe when Franklin gets killed by the chainsaw outside, what you said earlier, Ted, about being kind of like gory without showing gore. We just see the motions. We see him going up and down and in and out and things of that nature. And I think it's played to nice effect. And of course, his sister is screaming. So I think the way they did it worked really well for that time. If it wasn't for that, I would also just go with the van and the hitchhiker. But, oh, actually, I know what my favorite one. is the truck driver running away from his truck, never to be seen again. Nobody saves the poor truck driver.
Yeah, I don't know what happens to the truck driver. I don't think anybody really does. That should have been the sequel, What Happened to the Truck Driver?
It leads into a sequel that never happened the way it should have, right? Yeah,
I discussed my favorite sequence. I like everything that happens to Sally in the house. I think it's all really well done. It gives you more insight into the scary characters. You get more of a motivation as to why they're doing what they're doing, even though it's crazy and it's completely insane. The grandpa stuff, that could take that or leave it. But the three actors, the hitchhiker, the old man, the cook, and Leatherface, they really do play it well here. I know Ken, you had said well acted. You kind of chuckled at that with what Roger Ebert said. For not having any lines, Leatherface is scary. He speaks no lines to exemplify horror that way by just your actions and how you portray, how you hold yourself and portray yourself. Gunnar Hansen is probably a little underrated as far as you're talking about one of your all-time great slasher.
Did he ever do anything else?
A lot of B movies.
Yeah.
And he was big on the convention circuit.
Okay.
My favorite part with Leatherface, so when the guy who was driving the van to go find the other two, he gets to the door and he's knocking on the door and you could swear you can hear like a child giggling.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. So he thinks it might be his friends that are playing with him.
Joke on him, yeah.
Right. I understand why he goes into the house. Because he thinks that they're in there. But I think the fact that Leatherface sets him up to come in so he can kill him, I think that's what happens there. So I kind of appreciate that.
Yeah, but then you get the other side of him. Because after he kills that particular guy, that's when you see him go into the front room and he puts his head in his hands and he starts shaking his head. He didn't want to kill anybody. That's terrifying. I mean, he's just brutalized three people.
We hear that when we hear the cook talk about, like, the hitchhiker's not supposed to leave him by himself. He kind of didn't want these people to be there because I think there's too many of them. I think if there's one person and you knock off one, then that's easier to get away with than, let's say, five, because one is maybe bound to escape, right? That's what he's worried about. So I don't think he wanted any of these people to show up to his front door. And I think that's why he was discouraging them to go to the one house, because he just wanted them. I think he just wanted them to leave.
I think left to his own devices, I don't know if Leatherface kills people. I mean, you look at his reaction in that front room. That's legitimate acting. He doesn't say anything, but you get the feeling that there's something wrong.
What do you say, Eric? Is it time to go to our reviews?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm going to kick it off because we all know what I think of this movie. It's no secret. Now, I say this with all the love in the world. If you like these types of movies, do not listen to me, because I'm going to tell you flat out, I don't like these kind of movies. I don't like the genre. I respect this movie for what it did and what it set up and the series of movies after it that it created. It is definitely historically significant. I understand why it's a cult classic. I understand why people love this movie. I understand why it is a top-tier horror movie, but for me, it sucks. The acting is bad. The plot is bad. The movie's bad. Everything is bad in this movie. If I ever watch it again, you might have to take Leatherface to me. How long is this movie? Hour and a half?
About an hour and 25.
Oh, my hour goodness, really? Yeah. Wow. Hour 25, I'll never get back. I'm giving it a D, as in dumb, but don't listen to my review. Listen to Ted's. Ted's the one who likes this genre. He speaks for all you people that like this genre. Not sure what Ken's review is going to be. Well, let's hear what he has to say.
I almost want to say ditto and just leave it at that. But I think because I do appreciate some of the things that are done here, and I really appreciate the setup at the beginning of the movie. Marilyn Burns, who plays Sally, I actually think she does a really good job of being that lone survivor. I mean, the way she screams and she finds a way to get out of it. The acting is so-so. None of these people went on to do anything worth of note, unfortunately. I mean, we talked about some B movies, but basically probably the horror convention circuit was a big thing probably for all these people. I agree with Eric. It's the granddaddy of all these slasher films, the slasher films that we've had for over the last 50 years. We could thank Texas Chainsaw Massacre for them. So if you do enjoy the genre, yeah, this is where you need to start. I don't think I feel like this is a D for dumb. But again, it's not my type of movies that I like. Though, I do like Scream. And to a certain extent, I do like Freddy Krueger. But that's kind of a little bit more fantasy horror. I'm going to go with a C to C minus on this, because it is not a movie album I'm ever going to watch again. And I would love to give it a higher grade because its place in history, and I respect that. It's like music. There are bands I respect in music, but I don't listen to them. But I know where their place is, and I appreciate that. This is kind of the same thing. But for me, it's something I'm not coming back to.
All right, Ted. It's all you, man. This is your movie, your genre, your crowd.
This is all for you, Damien.
It's all for you, Damien. This is your time to shine and sell this movie.
I'm not going to sit here and have any sort of shocked reaction to what you both said. I completely understand. Like I've said before on our other podcasts, there are two things that are subjective in movies: comedy and horror. What scares one person is not going to scare another person. What one person finds funny, another person is not going
to
find funny.
This Amen movie, to that.
Yeah. This movie, for me, it brought a realism to horror movies, because I came a little bit later to this movie. I didn't see it for the first time until college. It brought a level of independent horror vibe to it I really enjoyed. And now that I've had such a broad base of horror movies that I can draw from, there is some of the Italian horror, some of the up-close pictures of eyeballs and things like that. You get a lot of that in like the Antonio Fulci zombie movie, which is a brilliant movie. Like we've said, this is the granddaddy of them all. This is the movie that started it. This movie changed the game. Banned in some countries. People walk out. People are terrified. And I think a lot of that has to do with the imagination. And Ken put it brilliantly, the movie set up in the best possible way. I'm not the biggest Friday the 13th fan. I think it gets hokey. Freddy Krueger got too funny. And then Michael Myers turned into Superman. So this is more reality-based. And it's grounded in the backstory of a real-life event that is probably scarier than the movie. There are sequences here that are never going to be able to be forgotten. You have to give Tobe Hooper a lot of credit for changing the game and saying, okay, you know what? We're done with all of this nice cookie-cutter, cheesy horror. We're going to give you something that's real and visceral. It's no holds barred, and we're coming at you, and we're not going to stop. Once the horror starts, it doesn't let up. And while it does have some problems that I do acknowledge, it's just one of those movies for me. For me, it's a solid B. Franklin takes it down from an A, essentially. If Franklin wasn't Franklin, it's an A movie for me. I do like the end. However, I like the ending of The House of 1,000 Corpses a little bit better. It spawned a lot of my other favorite horror movies. This movie, it can't be denied its place. It deserves all of the credit it gets, because there are parts that do scare me legitimately. Yeah, I still want to know what happens to this truck driver.
Yeah, right?
I will say this about the movie that I didn't say in my final review. There are legitimate scares in this movie. I'm not saying this movie didn't scare me, because it did. Girl pops out of the freezer. You know, Leatherface comes out of nowhere and takes out Franklin with his chainsaw. There's some really legitimate scary things, and there's some nice build-up. It did make me feel uneasy to watch this movie, which isn't a bad thing.
No.
You know, if a horror movie can make you feel uneasy, it's probably doing something right. But for me, it's just not my genre. But I just wanted to throw that out there.
We brought up Scream. The Jamie Kennedy character goes through the rules of the horror movie. You know the one horror movie that Wes Craven doesn't poke fun at?
This
Texas
one?
Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
he pokes fun at Freddy and Jason and Michael Myers, but he doesn't poke fun at Texas Chainsaw Massacre. That tells you that this is a different type of a thing. Huh. The cattle truck driver, the name of his character was Ed Ginn.
Yes.
Really? Well, let you know.
That's interesting. Anyway, you know, everybody made a big deal about, you know, the Freddy versus Jason movie.
I didn't.
Me neither.
It was stupid, in my opinion. But you don't see Leatherface versus Michael Myers or Leatherface versus Freddy, or because this movie's different, a little bit more disturbing. And Ken, you're exactly right. It makes you feel very uneasy. And it's like, what exactly are we watching? I like that. It's more reality based.
Talking about feeling uneasy, I just wanted to say this is our first podcast. Ted was in the hospital for a little bit, and so we're appreciative of him being back and us being able to do this. If you wonder why it took a little time for us to have some episodes out, let's just put it this way. 2023 was just the year of us dealing with shit. I'm happy that my brother is here to do this with me, and we're looking forward to giving you some more movie reviews, including the Amityville Horror coming up next and Fright Night after that.
I thank you very much.
That's right. Yes. Amityville, that'll be an interesting discussion as well, too. Kind of one of those movies that set up a craze.
Reality-based horror there as well.
Exactly. World Wide Web, where can they find us? Whoever wants to talk. Go for it.
Well, we can be found on X.
Oh, that's
which
right.
Is formerly known as Twitter.
Has it been that long? Oh my goodness.
Yeah, the artist formerly known as Twitter.
Wow. All right, Prince.
We can be found there on Hooked_Movies. Right? Yeah.
Yep. As far as I know, we're still there.
Okay. Yeah.
Elon Musk hasn't closed us down yet.
Yeah, we haven't been shut down permanently. That's where we can be found there. And of course, whatever podcast platform you're listening to us on, whether it be Spotify, Good Pods, Apple, if you can, leave us a 5-star review. It helps us get noticed. It helps us get looked at. And, you know, eventually, hopefully, maybe one day we can rise to the level of Rotten Tomatoes certified.
You know, don't forget to tell your friends, your family members, to people that are just walking down the street, walking the dog, robbing a gas station, whatever. You know, let them know about our podcast. We appreciate the word of mouth. You could also find us on Facebook, on Hooked on Movies. You know, we have some articles out there. One of those articles are the 10 most overrated underground movies. Spoiler alert, the number one film they put on that was Fight Club.
That's underground.
Wow is what I'm
thinking.
That's
pretty mainstream. But Ken, you're exactly right. Word of mouth is the best way for you to share your love of a podcast. If you like what we're doing here, tell your friends. You know, if you have a friend that comes up to you and says, hey, I listen to this podcast, you need to listen to it. It's been found that more people are likely to listen to your podcast that you recommend. Please recommend us to anybody if you like what we're doing. That all that does is help.
I just wanted to give a shout out to Andy Martinez. He's a frequent contributor to our Facebook group, Hooked on Movies. We would love to hear from you too on the articles that we post, or give us a little feedback about the podcast that we do here, things that maybe we could do better for you, or movies that you want us to review. And maybe we'll give you a shout out as well on the podcast.
Cool.
Tell us what you think of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Tell us if you like to wear human flesh on your head. So.
If you do, you probably shouldn't be listening to us. But
probably not. But we would not. But you know,
we're not going
to
discourage.
We're not going to discount you. We would discourage you to do that. Yes. But we're not going to discount you from listening to the podcast.
That's all the time we have for this episode. We will be doing Amityville Horror next from 1979. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And as always, good night. And have a pleasant tomorrow.
See you at the movies.
See you next time on Hooked on Movies.